This podcast is comprised of three volumes of what I call the Second Amendment Chronicles, Volume 1. The first recorded instance of gun control. At first blush, you might think this is going to be a biblical lesson. I can assure you, though, that it's not. It is, however, a life principle based on a biblical example. To my knowledge, the following information documents the first historical incidents of gun control, at least that I'm aware of. Okay, it might be more correct to refer to it as weapons control, but the idea is the same. So the Israelites were in constant conflict with the nearby Philistines. And in fact, the Philistines had enjoyed quite a bit of success in oppressing and keeping the Israelites under the thumb. At this time, the newly crowned king Saul and his son Jonathan were about to lead the Israelites up against the Philistines in battle. So I'm going to read a few verses from the Old Testament, the first book of Samuel, chapter 13, verses 19 through 22. Now there was no smith found throughout all the land of Israel, for the Philistines said, "Lest the Hebrews make them swords or spears." But all the Israelites went down to the Philistines to sharpen every man his share and his coulter and his axe and his mattock. Yet they had a file for the mattocks and for the coulters and for the forks and for the axes and to sharpen the goads. So it came to pass in the day of battle that there was neither sword nor spear found in the hand of any of the people that were with Saul and Jonathan. But with Saul and with Jonathan, his son, was there found. So in other words, they had swords. Everybody else had these farming instruments, basically. The Philistines had figured out, as many leaders have in modern times, how to keep the people down, remove their weapons. In fact, the Philistines went so far as to remove even the tools needed to make and keep the agriculture implements sharp, lest the Israelites turn those tools to manufacture weapons. That was the concern, that was the fear. But in verse 21, we see that the Israelites had found workarounds to the Philistine restrictions, and they had files that they were able to sharpen their farming implements with. Thus, they had the ability to sharpen their implements, and then they had something akin to a deadly weapon. In the end, the Israelites were successful under the leadership of Saul and Jonathan in throwing off the reins of their Philistine overlords. And so ended the first recorded incidents of weapons control, in my opinion. Subsequent peoples have not been so fortunate or as successful at resistance as the Israelites were. Most recently, the Soviets and the Chi Coms successfully eliminated tens of millions of their own people, and the Nazis were close behind. Other minor tyrants achieved similar results, albeit on a much smaller scale. So is it sinking in yet? Can anyone question the motives of America's founders in attempting to keep the American people from ever being disarmed by their own government? The Second Amendment is not a government-provided right to hunt with muskets. It is a restriction on the government from interfering in the God-given right of the American people to keep and bear arms, which shall not be infringed. No ifs, ands, or buts. It is not a suggestion to be put aside when other circumstances seem to dictate, nor does it have any caveats. It is a clear mandate that the government stay out of our business. I'm now going to proceed with Volume 2 of the Second Amendment Chronicles. I'm reminded of the song by Tina Turner, "What Has Love to Do with It," or something along those lines. I can't even say I've ever heard the song, but I think of that term, and here I ask, what has the Second Amendment to do with me anyway? I keep hearing about my Second Amendment rights, but I don't understand. What is a Second Amendment right, and who granted it to me? So I've read the amendment over and over. Here it is. a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Again, I read it over and over. It doesn't seem to be addressed to we the people, as far as I can see. I see the word right in there, the right of the people. But there is nothing in the wording that suggests I have been granted a right by anyone. For instance, if I meet all the requirements, and I guess I pay the money, I can get a license to drive a motor vehicle on public roads. That's a right that the government, for the most part, extends to me. Now, I've done some reading, and it appears to me that the group of men who wrote the Second Amendment understood that people naturally possess what they refer to as unalienable rights. I don't consider driving an unalienable right. I guess I'd be upset if I couldn't drive, but hey, what can I say? I don't think that's what they had in mind. And where do we read about unalienable rights? We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, meaning whatever it takes to get those things, to achieve those things, life, liberty, and happiness. So it seems clear from this sentence in the Declaration of Independence that no person came along and told the founders about unalienable rights. They specifically signed a document, in fact, that put them in danger of their lives, stating that the truths they understood were self-evident. They didn't think they needed a king or a parliament or any governing body to grant them the certain rights they had in mind. They thought that the truth of these unalienable rights was self-evident, and so they said. Now, maybe you are unaware, but when the writers of the Bill of Rights put pen to paper, they seemed to forget to describe the additional God-given unalienable rights they wrote about. Why would that be? Possibly they understood that the rights were self-evident and needed no granting from men or any explanation of such. I think we're getting closer. So the Second Amendment is not a right. It doesn't establish any right. I don't have a Second Amendment right. There's where did it come from? It is not addressed to we the people. The Second Amendment is a direct mandate to government. It informs the powers to be that the natural rights, the right to keep and bear arms being one of them, of we the people, are not any part of its jurisdiction other than to make sure the rights are protected. So when a politician attempts to curry favor by stating that he or she does not wish to interfere with the rights of the American people to keep and bear arms, there's a certain amount of disingenuousness, pandering going on. Most should know the truth about the Bill of Rights. However, I feel the dumbed down times in which we now find ourselves, that might not be the case. I guess like Nancy Pelosi told us about Obamacare, you got to pass it to know what's in it. Well, I guess we get these elected officials raising their hands and swearing to uphold and defend the Constitution. You'd think they know what's in it. You think they read it, though? They don't seem to know. So, maybe they should read the Constitution and know what's in it before they raise the hand to swear an oath to protect and defend it, and not read it after the fact, or never read it. I mean, look, the Affordable Care Act, what we know as Obamacare, which Nancy said had to be passed before, you know, we could understand it, it was 20,000 pages long, and they rushed it through in the middle of the night. No one had time to read it. No one has probably read it to date. It was patched together piecemeal by bureaucrats probably somewhere down in the dungeons of the halls of Congress. The Constitution, on the other hand, including all the amendments, at this point contains just over 7,500 words. And it's been with us for years, so there's really no reason an elected official shouldn't take the time to read it before swearing to uphold and defend it. Unless they don't think that document is binding on them, and I'm sure many of them don't. So let me add this. If the Second Amendment was revoked, by another amendment, that's how it would have to be done. You can't just get rid of it. You really can't, negate it by legislation either. This is the madness that we're involved in. But like the Prohibition Amendment, it would have to be another amendment would have to be passed. You can't just get rid of constitutional amendments. So, remember, the Second Amendment doesn't grant any right. It informs the government to keep out. So, if the Second Amendment was revoked via another amendment, and those in the federal government took that as their cue to stop securing the natural rights, that does nothing to restrict my rights because they're from God. All right. I think we've gone far enough there. I'll continue on in volume 3. Okay, this is the final part of the Second Amendment Chronicles, Volume 3, and I've entitled it The Second Amendment and What Do Rights Have to Do with Anything? So again, let me start with the Second Amendment. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's the Second Amendment. The right, as mentioned there, the right of the people. The right. Is there any place in the Constitution or any of the writings of the framers of our government where the right mentioned in the Second Amendment is established? Any serious student who bothers to engage in an objective reading of our founding documents and or the written dialogue of them between our framers would be hard-pressed to arrive at any other conclusion that the aforementioned right to keep and bear arms was never thought to have been established by our government. In fact, any serious reading of the founders will establish for anyone concerned about honesty that the right to keep and bear arms not only predated the founding of the U.S., the United States of America, but was considered to be a natural right, God-given, and was codified long before in English law as part of the Castle Doctrine. There it is. So, it is important to understand that any legislation passed on the federal or state level is not only an infringement on the right, the God-given right, but it's clearly unconstitutional. So, Joe Biden and his progressive hordes, they need to tread very carefully here. Any talk about Second Amendment rights is pure BS and nothing more than a smokescreen. The Second Amendment, again, does not establish any right. Rather, it is a warning, a mandate to government that it has no authority to interfere in the God-given natural right of we the people to keep and bear arms. I am a legal, law-abiding gun owner. I enjoy the sport of going to the firing range and hitting a target of bullseye from a distance of 100 to 300 yards. The firearm of choice to do that is my AR-15. It is not an automatic firearm. It is not a battlefield firearm. In fact, if the military called on me to go door-to-door in some godforsaken city in Iraq or Afghanistan with my semi-auto AR-15, I would not only be very concerned for my safety, I would absolutely refuse to comply with any such suicidal request. So finally, I keep firearms to protect my home and family. That is my God-given natural right. I have never been arrested. I have never broken any law with any of my firearms. I have never pointed any of my firearms at anyone. My firearms are usually safely locked away in my home. Why is it then every time some criminal goes nuts with a firearm, some politician's knee-jerk reaction is to establish another layer of unconstitutional restrictions upon legal and law-abiding gun owners instead of doing something to keep criminals off the streets? Why do elected officials think that they can reduce gun violence by attempting to confiscate firearms, of which I am permitted to keep and bear via natural right? A right they swear to protect in their oath of office and essentially make me a criminal for owning such firearms. I am an American citizen. I will not be made a criminal. Therefore, I will refuse any unconstitutional restrictions of my rights. One final point needs to be made as a postscript here. While we might agree that natural rights are God-given, so-called rights, even those that are God-given, cannot always be exercised absent a fight. Our founders, in fact, believed in this set of unalienable rights. Amongst them, the freedom of speech, religion, assembly, the right to keep and bear arms, the right to be free in one's home from governmental intrusion and seizure of property, etc., etc. Unfortunately, their British overlords were not as jealous for these expressed rights the colonists thought dear as were the colonists, nor as the colonists would have liked them to be. So the colonists had to go to war and fight for those rights. Today, the traditional rights that many Americans have held as sacrosanct for years are frowned upon, and we are having a new set of basic human rights foisted upon us. Just one example. We are told that the right to medical treatment is now a basic human right. Whether we agree or not, we will eventually be forced to pay for and provide that service or that right to those unable or unwilling to pay. And we will be forced essentially at the point of a gun or the threat of a prison cell. So, in the end, we will all have to decide which rights we are willing to fight for. Hey, thanks for listening.